Hi, everybody. It's Jim Bakiai. The podcast is Be You, The World Will Adjust, The World Needs More of You. Before we start out, if you like the podcast, share it with people, because there are a lot of people out there that need the help. It's not about the ratings. It's not about the money. Well, there is no money, so it isn't about the money. It's really about my desire to get my message out to as many people as humanly possible before I leave this side of the green grass at some point in the distant future, I hope. There are a lot of people out there that are really lost, and my podcast and my book, you know, my mission is to help them find themselves. And once they find themselves, they're in a much better place to be able to find the right thing for them. I'm always constantly amazed at every single new person I take on coaching, how reluctant, how afraid they are to sort of, well, can I say that? And I said, well, is it true? I say, is it true? And they said, yeah, no, it's true. And I said, well, then you can say it. If it's true, it's true. And I was just on with a good friend last night that I was helping. And you know, we were talking about him using it as infomercial. And he said to me, you know, normally I try to scope out the interview and you know, ask them this so I can position myself. And I said, no, that's just too much work. Just be yourself. Just be you. And you know what always amazes me? When people phone me afterwards and they say, you know, I did it. I just told them who I was and what I'm good at, and people I like to work with, and how I resolve conflict, what's a perfect day. And they're amazed. That moment of joy in their voice, that moment of, God, it's just so much easier than pretending to be somebody else. Everybody in life, you know, has multiple personas, but you know, life is just much easier if you just get to your own persona and then start to decide who's in and who's out. It's not about convincing them. It's not a matter of saying, oh, I wish they were my friend, or I wish I had their job. If they're out, they're out. Keep searching, because there are people out there. Think about the relationship world, right? Being out there, putting yourself out, meeting different people. No, that's not the right person. This one's closer, type of thing. You know, I think if people were more true to themselves in all relationships in life, they'd probably end up finding the right person. And if they found the right person, it'd probably be a much more significantly happy life. So that's my personal pitch. Let's help more people. And as I've said before, if you read the book and you listen to the podcast, you want to send me an email, I'd be glad to help you out. Reach out to me, jim@bakiinternational.com. So I want to continue on the theme of the war for talent, because this week's been wild. I just watched CNN last night and they were talking about pilots, and they were talking about how there's this massive shortage of pilots, how the United States alone needs 22,000 pilots in 2022. And the people that are being impacted the most are all the regional airlines, because the big airlines are able to pay these people and everything else. And, you know, when I talk about rethinking the world on talent, I want to put out a shout out to United Airlines, because United Airlines has started a flying school out in Arizona to bring people in to learn to fly. Now, mind you, you know, I'm going to give them credit for this, but, you know, it's $100,000 to learn to fly, and it's 1,500 hours. Now, they've subsidized it a bit down to $77,000. But my question is, why don't you just teach them for free? And then if you hire them, they end up paying you back 50% or 30%, right? The key there is the intake, right? Don't create hurdles for people that legitimately want to be pilots, legitimately are talented enough, and legitimately can be qualified. So corporations, let's start thinking differently. Let's think about our sort of what our needs are. What's the end goal? The end goal is we want more people flying. So how do we create an environment? Great first step. Let's set up a flying school. Probably others will set up, if they're really smart, all the airlines to get together and create one flying school and drive in as many people as possible to that. Maybe have to change the 1500 hour limit, right? Because, you know, if it's free, maybe people can do it 5 days a week, you know, when people have to spend $100,000. Christ, they got to keep a job and, you know, they can only get a couple of hours a week. But what if it was free and somebody said, hey, shit, I'm going to take my vacation, right? I'm going to get 20 hours this weekend. I'm going to get 20 hours next week. Extend that across the board. You know, I was out the other day and I was talking with a couple of CEOs of private equity groups, and they were talking about analysts and associates and how the wage inflation for those people. And I said, well, you know, part of the problem is that in historical terms in the investment banking world, people came in as an analyst and associate, became VPs, became directors and managing directors. But organizations aren't growing that much. People running the organizations are much younger. So that upward mobility is not available. And if you just keep chasing, plus the competition for those people is fintech and startup companies and everything else. So if you just keep trying to chase them with money, it doesn't work. It really doesn't work. You have to think about what's their motivation. What is it they want? Maybe they want more vacation. Maybe they want something else, right? Think about it. And then the second thing is, you can't think about everybody in the world as wanting upward mobility. There are lots of people that are perfectly happy to have a very good, well-paying job that they're going to get an annual increase and, you know, maybe a little bonus and maybe a little equity participation and something like that. And they're perfectly happy with that job. And they don't aspire to more. I mean, if you think about the majority of the people that work in governments, the civil service, most of those people do it because it's a great pension plan, it's a great benefits plan, secure job, it's those types of things. So corporations need to expand their thinking. My friend Sandeep Sahota said to me the other day that, you know, he's lost a lot of people in the data group where he works. And he said, you know, he works for a bank. And he said, you know, what's interesting, Sandeep was on my podcast a while back ago. He said, what's interesting is they're not going to other banks. They're going to CVS. They're going to Walmart because data is huge. And you have to rethink that your historical competitors for talent is different. And so this really takes a significant, not just mind-shaping difference, but it takes a significant amount of time to think about what's the end game. Go back to the pilots. I need 22,000 pilots. I can pay the pilots I have more, but that's not going to solve my problem on the 22,000. What are we solving for, right? And I know I've done a podcast on what are we solving for? What are we solving for? You know, even people like the PGA, Professional Golf Association of the World, there's a Saudi Arabian conglomerate that's trying to steal the top players. So what did the TPGA do? They set aside a $50 million fund for the top players. Do the top players need another $50 million? Probably not. But it's a drop in the bucket for the PGA because if they lose 10 of their top 25 players, what happens to their television rights? What happens to their audiences? What happens to all of that stuff? What happens to their merchandise? What happens to everything? $50 million is a drop in the bucket. But that's thinking out of the box, right? That's not sort of going, oh God, you guys should stay on this tour. We've been really guilt. We've been really good to you, right? The power has shifted. And if corporations don't recognize that the power has shifted and the traditional ways about thinking about people, compensation, about reward system, you know, maybe organizations need to think about giving more people in the company stock. You know, and that vests over time. So you don't get it in 1, 2, 3 years, but you get it when you retire. So, you know, in addition to giving them a nice nest egg, what it really does is it creates a forced savings program. Maybe it's a matching program. Maybe you increase the matching program. The other thing I think organizations need to do is, you know, and this is counter me because I'm a recruiter as well, but most companies have like a $500 reward or $1,000 reward if you refer something to them, you know, someone to them. You're sort of like, oh, well, that's pretty good. You know, someone earning a reasonable wage is not bad. What if you make it $10,000? What if you make it $20,000? What if you turn your organization into a recruiting machine? Why don't you really make it worth their while so that they're like, like 500 is great and 1,000, don't get me wrong, it's good, but it's not enough to, you know, I mean, it's almost like a second job for people. They got their job and then they're going home at night and thinking, oh, I'll get, you know, maybe Katie would like to come over here and so-and-so come up over here. And, you know, at the end of the year, they may earn an extra $50,000 or $60,000. You're going to pay that off in recruiting fees anyways. And at the end of the day, like United Airlines, it's not the money. It's the time. It's the time to get pilots. They can steal all the regional pilots. But then what happens to the regional system? What happens to the stewardesses? What happens to the mechanics? What happens to the flight operations people? What happens to those people when those airlines can no longer fly the same number of routes? This is a pandemic problem, and it's going on all over the world. And I don't know where everybody went, but overnight, everybody's disappeared. And it's hard to find people and talk to people in the restaurant industry, talk to people in every industry possible. And it seems that everyone thinks the only solution is to pay more. Okay, so you pay me more. And a little while longer, someone else goes, well, I can do better than that. And then they pay me more. And you kind of go over there and pay me more, pay me more, pay me more, pay me more, pay me more. And this vicious cycle of trying to keep people. So if you're running a company, you have, even if you have a division, you need to sit back and you need to ask yourself the question, what can I do differently? How can I do it differently? What is it to incentivize those people? Maybe it's increase the pension plan. I don't know. I don't have the answer to it. But you need to get some people and you need to get some young people in a room, in focus groups, and ask them, you know, what makes you, especially now that there's no office, right? How do I bind someone to my company without an office, right? This new culture, just a sidebar, I saw this funny little thing talking about the metaverse, you know, this virtual world that is about to unfold on us or has been unfolding. And it was a cartoon and it had two parents with their kids and they had an old style TV set. Remember when you were a kid, your parents would say, you know, you're sitting too close to the TV, it'll damage your eye. And then the next picture was a room full of people with Oculus lenses on their face, watching virtual reality through their Oculus lens, which I thought was kind of funny. But as everyone knows, I like thinking differently. I like turning things upside down, recognizing what's the problem we're solving for. It's like the PGA. What was the problem we're solving for? Can't lose our top people, right? I've had this conversation with numerous CEOs and people in other areas about, you know, like, who are those people that they leave and they could put a big hole in you, right? Not just money-wise, because at that point, you'd pay anything, right? If you think about it, the old adage, people always say, people will pay more to hire someone else than they would pay me to do the same job. And if I leave, they're going to have to pay somebody more. But for some reason, we won't pay ourselves anymore. It's like back in the day when magazines had all these little things in it, Time Magazine, Newsweek, everybody. And they'd say, you know, new members, 30 cents a week for the next 52 weeks. Old members pay $2 a week for the rest of your life, right? There's just something wrong with that thinking. And people need to break out. People need to not be afraid to sort of say, okay, we're going to take the whole thing and just chuck it out. We're going to think about it differently, right? We're going to think about, how do we share the spoils with everybody? How do people think of themselves as part of it all, right? And give them ability in different ways to do well. So I recently was talking to a very, very good friend of mine and who had a promotion. It was just crazy. He got this promotion. And then when they were working, you know, on his compensation plan, it's just lunacy. So, you know, he looked at the compensation plan and he said, I'm going to make less money in the new compensation plan than I made before the promotion. This is a joke? Like seriously? Those types of things really piss people off. They not only piss people off because it's just stupid, but I think it pisses them off because sometimes they think to themselves, are they stupid or they just think I'm stupid? Did they not think I could do the math myself? And so when you're in charge of people, you can't think about you. You have to think about them. It doesn't matter what your message is. It's what's the message to them, right? And so take some time, you know, put yourself in their shoes. You know, oftentimes when I was coming up through the ranks and somebody would say something stupid to me or something, and I would always turn it to them. I'd say, would you do this deal? It's like when someone says to me, you know, we should hire that person without a guarantee. I said, would you go somewhere without a guarantee? No, I wouldn't go anywhere without a guarantee. But it's that mentality of that I'm trying to get a leg over on someone, right? I'm trying to pull a little fast one, whether intentionally or unintentionally, it's at the same result. So be more mindful. If the war on talent could become as pandemic as I believe it is, and even more, then you need to really think long and hard about, you know, not only changing the compensation system, but let's start with, how am I treating my employees? How am I treating my employees? Are they like super psyched to be here, super psyched about the opportunity, going home at night and just feeling like the harder I work, you know, the old adage that we all got brought up, work hard, you'll be rewarded, bullshit. But we need to start thinking about that. We need to start thinking about that reward for people. We need to start thinking about, not thinking about, well, they're lucky to have this job or you know, they make a good living. And as I said to one of my friends this week, I said, everybody has a part of their brain that says I'm getting screwed. Everybody. It's just inherent. I don't know if I'm getting paid the right amount. I don't know if the person I report to is actually taking care of me. I don't know any of those types of things. And it's like, it's lodged in your brain. That's a constant irritant. It's with you all the time. It's in your moments of quiet. It's always there. So imagine if you could remove that from people's minds. If you imagine you could truly take care of them, money, opportunity, all kinds of things, by understanding what it is that motivates them, what it is they cherish, what it is that is a reward. You know, I often told the story about when my kids were little, my oldest daughter, Emma, I would pay her for A's. And she would, whenever I pick her up at school, she would slap the test or the exam or the assignment on my windshield for the A and looking for $5 or $10. And then B's were neutral and C's she owed me back. Well, that worked with her, right? But it didn't work with Ed and it didn't work with Nora. And, you know, there were different motivational factors. So you can't just blanket across the board and say, well, if it works with Emma, it'll work with Ed, it'll work with Nora, Jack, Sam, Sarah. It doesn't actually. It works more with Sarah and Emma. We're very similar. So it takes that time to manage people to really understand what drives them. And probably even more importantly, understand what you're doing to piss them off. Stop doing it. Find out what it is and stop fucking doing it. Because nothing is more demotivating to an employee than someone that's constantly pissing them off. Remove that part of the brain. You know, I've seen plenty of examples where organizations have been truly honest with someone. They've said, listen, we just don't have any more opportunities for you. We think you're great. We love you here and everything else. But if there are opportunities elsewhere, you should go pursue them. Now, that's heresy in historical terms. Most organizations saw it only through their eyes and they would bullshit people. Oh, you know, Katie, you've got a real career here. You know, you just hang on. You put another 40 years on the gravel pile and, you know, you could be vice president. And that just lingers in people. It pisses them off because they know it's bullshit. People want the truth. So tell them the truth. The last thing I'll tell you, this is what makes a satisfied and happy employee. They understand what their job is. They understand what's required from them. They are given the resources to do the job and they are held accountable for the job. The second thing is they understand how their compensation is related to their job. So if they do their job well or better than, does the compensation fit to them making more or getting promoted more? And if they don't do it as well, what are the consequences of not doing it as well? The third thing that I've always, always, always believed is really important is people want to work with good people. They want to work with people that they say to themselves, I work with really good, hardworking, genuine, honest people. And they know when someone's there for the wrong reason. They know when someone is getting paid incorrectly. They know. And that just goes into that little part of that brain where people just want to get irritant. And then the last thing, which I did a survey that asked the question, do you believe that your boss has your best interests at heart and you're benefiting in the best way that you possibly can, utilizing your skills in a most opportunistic way? If you're a corporation and you can answer all four of those questions, you've got a powerful workforce. You have a happy workforce. You have a motivated workforce. And a workforce that has those characteristics outperforms every single time. So take some time. Think about your people and be honest with them. Tell them the truth. And some may leave and some may not. But you're better off in either way. I'm Jim Bakai. Podcast is Be You. And I wish a good week to all my snowy, snowy friends up north.